What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. Tonight, we're going north. We were talking about San Diego and Carl DeMille last week. Tonight, we're going all the way up the coast, and we're going to San Francisco, the city by the bay, the city that is in moral decay. We're going to talk all about it. Is it failing? Should it fail? How bad is it up there in San Francisco? And sitting in for special guest host tonight, a good friend of the show, Zach, is back with us tonight. Camila's on vacation, but I'm happy to have Zach here and chat about San Francisco. What's up, Zach? How are you doing tonight?
It's great to see you. Great to be back. You know, like I was telling you before the show, I've done more kind of crash course on what's going on in San Francisco just so I could be up to date. And boy, did I have a lot to read. There is a lot going on in San Francisco. And personally, I know you wanted to make it a state. It is a state podcast, but the model of San Francisco applies here to San Diego as well. So I do think it's worth kind of pointing out what's going on up there.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about before we hopped on tonight about how for so long San Francisco has enjoyed this sort of faux bragging rights of, well, this is how progressivism is done, and look at how great our city is. Look at all these wonderful things that we're doing, and we're soft on crime. And I think it's all we're going to really talk about tonight and get into it in statistics. We're going to watch some videos. All the chickens have basically come home to roost when it's come to San Francisco. Everything just came absolutely crashing down. COVID, their stance on COVID and their reluctance to reopen and how strict they got with COVID absolutely contributed to how bad it got up in San Francisco. And you were just telling me a story. I've been to San Francisco recently, I think in the past year. You've been to San Francisco recently. What was your experience when you were up in San Francisco?
So the whole ride up there, I was thinking Full House, right? Just trying to hope to see a good, nice San Francisco, but knowing people say it's gone to the side. And driving through that city, first off, getting into San Francisco has an eerie feeling to begin with, as you're going into the island of San Francisco and you've got 9,000 cameras watching you as you come in. We drove over to the Golden Gate Bridge because, you know, we wanted to walk the bridge and experience that. The parking lot, I don't know if you've been there recently, but the parking lot that you go to is scattered in broken glass. The entire, not just one area, not just a corner, the entire parking lot has shattered glass next to every single car spot, because of how frequently people get their cars broken into. And so rather than having police out there or any type of security, they have signs. They have signs letting you know it's dangerous here. They have signs almost like they've accepted how crime is and that they just want to let you know, hey, smash and grabs are pretty popular over here, you know, just let you know. Like that blew my mind that there wasn't a presence of police at all. I mean, you had signs trying to, I don't know, scare off the criminals, but it was bad. And then not to mention, we drove into downtown. And I mean, I'm sure you've heard people refer to San Francisco as like, or even Los Angeles too, like the Walking Dead. And as funny, you know, or eerie as that comparison is, it's kind of true. When you get into the downtown area and you see people, unfortunately, methed out on heroin, on fentanyl, whatever the drug of choice is, it's lifeless, you know, and it's an eerie, scary feeling. The police we talked to suggested we get out of the city as quickly as we could. Like they did not say we should stay there long, which I thought was concerning coming from the police. And I know we're going to talk about the police morale, because that's a huge part of why crime is so common and so, you know, so every day at the levels it's at. But yeah, it was a pretty disturbing, unfortunate experience, because you can see San Francisco and the potential it has. You know, you can see the beautiful structures and everything that the city maybe once was. I didn't get to experience San Francisco before COVID, but man, after it, I wouldn't say it's as bad as Portland, don't know if you've been to Portland, but that's like the next level of what San Francisco could be. It's they've forgotten about the city. I mean, after the protests, there was nothing to wrap that up. So San Francisco's kind of has that don't touch kind or hands off approach to what's happening, and I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I was there last year. We went to go see a baseball game. And there, I will say it's not all a war zone. There are certain areas that San Francisco keeps up because, they still want people to come in. They still want tourism. But there was a different feeling to it. It was my first time in San Francisco since COVID, and it had been my first time in San Francisco in a long time. We used to go a lot in college. Now, this was, I don't know, back around 2008, 2000. Yeah, around those 2004, 2008 was when I was in college. I'm dating myself. And it was a beautiful city, and we loved going to San Francisco, and there was life to it, and it was quirky and it's weird, but that's what you like about San Francisco is that it is a little out there. Yeah, there were homeless people, but they were once in a while, and you expect that of any big city. No big city's gonna have zero homeless people. But the first time we went back last year, it was the first time back after COVID. There was a weird feeling, and you kind of put it correctly, like Walking Dead. It had this ominous, lifeless feeling, like you're walking down streets, stores were all shuttered up and boarded up. There was nobody on the streets. It just felt very lifeless. Like downtown felt very lifeless. There was no activity. It just has this eerie feeling to it. Thankfully, we just went in for the baseball game that one day. We stopped in North Beach, which is still a nice area. Yeah, it's different. It has a different feeling to it right now, and I think you see the videos of the Tenderloin, and you see the videos of what's going on with the homeless, and how bad it's gotten with fentanyl and the drugs. And you've seen the videos of Michael Schellenberger talking to homeless people who say, "Look, it's easier for me to just stay on the street and get paid money because San Francisco literally gives homeless people cash to stay on the street or be on the street." And he says, "Well, why would I go anywhere else? They give me money to stay on the street. It's enough for me to buy drugs. I can buy some food, and it's cheaper. I don't have to pay rent to set up a tent down here in this park right outside the cafe." Oh, that was the other thing I noticed. When you drive past City Hall in San Francisco, it's just all tents. It's like it's just they it used to be this beautiful area of City Hall. Now it's just surrounded by Tent City. So it's overrun to the point where I think they've lost control. I agree that it's become the model that they want for California and all the cities, but now it's become a bad omen of what happens when you go too far left in a lot of these cities. And what they're going to do, we're going to look at the numbers and see how bad it's gotten. I want to talk about first this article that sort of is really the one that made the rounds. Was it's actually from the San Francisco Chronicle, which is interesting. The title of it is "Cities Are Struggling. San Francisco Could Be In for the Biggest Doom Loop of All." Now it's funny that this actually came from the San Francisco Chronicle itself, that they actually called themselves out. Maybe that they're that self-aware. In San Francisco Chronicle, if and people don't know if they don't read it, very far left paper. It's probably farther left in like the New York Times. It starts off, "A doom loop is a noun, a scenario in which one negative development causes another negative development, which then makes the first problem worse, a vicious cycle." This is how San Francisco could die. Interconnected forces trap the city in economic freefall. Workers remain primarily remote. Office space sits empty. Businesses shutter. Mass transit is sharply reduced or even bankrupt, making it even harder for low and middle wage income workers who enable restaurants and small businesses to operate, causing major budget shortfalls from declining tax revenue that imperil numerous city services, trigger mass layoffs of city workers, and shred the social safety net, all of which cause more people to leave. Goes on to keep talking about it. I mean, that's a pretty good summation right off the bat of everything that's going wrong with San Francisco. It is sort of this doom loop of one thing after another, and now it's just in a downward spiral, right?
Yeah, I read that article you're referencing, and I believe somewhere at the bottom there's a quote that says, "Some believe current conditions present an opportunity to reimagine the city, but the problem is that their solutions are the same people that created the problems in the first place." Mm. So it's like the same people coming out and championing, we need to do reform, this. Are the very people who created the landscape that they're suffering in. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's the definition of insanity, trying the same thing over and over, expecting different results. Mm-hmm. And again, it speaks to that, a vicious cycle, you know, and yeah. It's like vicious cycle is a good way to put it.
Article goes on to say, though many American cities are struggling in the wake of COVID, San Francisco is perhaps in the greatest peril of them all. The city is heavily reliant on technology and other knowledge industries and lend themselves to remote work. And there's little evidence that employees will return to offices more than 2 or 3 days a week. And like I had mentioned, it does. Downtown has this weird feeling and it's very evident. I mean, go to do the eye test in downtown San Francisco. There's nobody down there. Maybe the most people you're going to get in downtown San Francisco at any point could be for a Warriors game or for like a Giants game. But other than that, like, you're not seeing the numbers that it was in downtown. And that's, I think that's happening across the country, commercial real estate, ever since COVID and the whole work from home thing. But San Francisco has really gotten bad. And thanks to San Francisco, all those tech bros and tech girls who make a lot of money moved down to places like San Diego and made housing more unaffordable. So thanks for that, San Francisco. See, it bleeds out into the rest of the state. It doesn't just stay contained in San Francisco.
No, it absolutely does bleed. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just trying to see what it's big. If you want to read the whole article, as always, I put the article in the show notes so you can go read it for yourself. City leadership has yet to pass any major legislation to support significant changes to transform the city. Ted Egan, the city's chief economist, believes that the likeliest scenario is that the forces of market capitalism will right the ship. Ideas such as office to housing conversions, for example, can't be done quickly or at a big enough scale to make a difference, he argued. We need an element of modesty. In San Francisco, there's a tradition of grand ambitions, and I think we need, rather than promoting a grand vision, we should let nature take its course while not going off the rails. Wow, there's actually someone advocating for free market capitalism in San Francisco. That's interesting.
Weird to hear.
Let's see. The San Francisco Controller's office estimated last November that the city could lose nearly $200 million per year in property taxes this is the really important number that I want everybody to remember, by 2028 in a worst case scenario where office vacancy remains high, a 35% plunge in office property revenue. Overall, the city is forecasting a $728 million deficit over the next two fiscal years and as much as $1.2 billion annual deficit by 2028. That could mean a lot of cuts to city services. So let's talk about that for a second. We're both, I would say, fiscally conservative. I don't know. Maybe we line up the same way libertarian wise on terms of economics and how much government intervention should be in someone's life. This is one thing that I see, and it just, to me, this is definitely the chickens coming home to roost, where you pushed a city to the brink of failure because of the mass amount of social programs that you put out there on the backs of taxes. And then the minute those taxes start to evacuate, you've overextended yourself. Now you have no way to pay for those social services, all these welfare programs, the homeless guy sitting on the street that Michael Schellenberg's talking to and making $800 a month. It all catches up to you sooner or later, right? So what's your thought on the fact that there's going to be almost $1 billion in deficit for the next couple of years?
Yeah, like you said, everything is theoretical until it's put to practice. And then once it's put to practice, you start to see the results, and the results are not what they wrote on paper or what they thought would be the results. And so, yeah, it's one of those things, kind of like you were saying. I mean, all these far left championed policies, the rhetoric on defund the police, you know, and the way that the police are practically hated in San Francisco, yet they're yelled at for not being efficient enough while having shortages in staff. I mean, it's again, every part of San Francisco's economy has this vicious cycle like built into it because it was championed by ideology rather than practicality and what's realistic. And kind of like the guy was saying, like, where is the natural course of San Francisco? Well, we don't know. It's all been hyped up and all this fluff to where it's like you don't actually know what San Francisco is capable of because it's just rotting from the lack of actual good governance to produce good paying jobs or to produce clean streets. I mean, it all feeds into itself. So yeah, I mean, it's why I think it's one of those reasons that I look at when I think why balance in governance is important, especially here in the United States. You don't have people that are fiscally, you know, concerned and more, you know, okay, well, how does this play out over, you know, 5-10 years, right? I mean, their terms may not even be that long, but that's how you have to look at these things. What happens after I leave, right? Because these people only care about their term in, and then they run to the next position and then leave the horrible policies that they thought were good behind. And it's like, there needs to be a commitment to the actual, you know, stability and sustainability of the city. And everyone's using San Francisco as like a stepping stone politically without taking responsibility.
Yeah. And I think it's a great lesson, especially for the rest of California, because when you look at how much of Sacramento politics are run by Bay Area politicians, it's a great lesson for the rest of California, who is also facing a, what's it, $22 billion deficit, that what's the old saying, that pigs get slaughtered, hogs get fed, or something like that. I can't remember if it's hogs get fed or pigs get slaughtered, something like that. Basically, the meaning of it is that when you overindulge when times are good, you end up going to slaughter, and it all goes to ruin. And I think California is a perfect example of that. And it's something that maybe free market economists and conservatives and fiscal conservatives have been screaming for years, which is, sure, you can, in the best of times, when the economy's good, everything's going great, and everything's working at max capacity, and you're bilking the taxpayer for every single dollar you can, sure, you can brag that you have all these social services and we give out all this money and we do X, Y, and Z and look at how much the government does. But you're teetering on the edge so precariously that the minute something goes bad, and in this case, San Francisco, a whole bunch of things went bad really quickly, that it all comes crashing down. It's almost like if you look at it on a personal level, when things are going good for somebody, they're making good money, everything's going great, you're spending money, you're going out to nice dinners, you're giving your friends gifts and stuff like that, and you're not worried about the consequences, then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you lose your job and your income is cut in half. Now you can't go out to dinner. You've overextended yourself. You have a car payment that's way too much. You mortgaged a house you can't afford. It goes down to the personal level, it goes to the city level, and it goes to the state level. When you overextend yourself, you're eventually going to have a deficit because you can't afford it. And I hope it's a lesson to San Francisco. They're going to have to do some really hard belt tightening to figure out what gets cut. There's going to be a lot of social services and a lot of these government welfare programs in San Francisco are going to get cut as a result of the fact that this deficit is looming. I mean, $728 million, $1.2 billion, those are huge numbers for a city to deal with. Right out of the, and on top of the fact that they're also trying to get more funding for police to keep the crime down, which we're going to get into as well. The other thing I want to talk about, and this is one of these things that, speaking of deficits, one of our favorite state senators, Scott Wiener, has been going on and on and on about the fact that BART, if you don't know what BART is, Bay Area Rapid Transit, it's basically like light trains that make their way in and out of the city. it's been struggling. It's been really bad. It's been down 40% of pre-pandemic levels, 28% down for downtown exits. The transit service budget forecasts show an expected $300 million deficit by 2026. As a result, the coming years could see widespread layoffs and service cuts, including shuttered station, long waits at remain stations during weekdays and end-to-weekend services. If BART dies or must cut back dramatically, commuters would be sorely challenged. Office attendance could fall further, as could excursions into the city. So, again, another doom loop of people won't go into the city. What's your take on BART? Should we save BART? Should we bail out BART? Oh, that's the other thing about it. There's a ballot measure that they're contemplating for 2026 to raise more tax revenue to keep BART alive. Let me add that stipulation in. What's your thought? Should we try to keep BART alive if it's not working?
I mean, it's a hard sell when you look at the statistics and how often it's used and how, you know, and how the trends are not positive and not going upward. You know, there's a huge push for public transportation to be the way of the future. And that would make sense if that was the trend of the population, and it's still not. So it's, again, one of these projects that they've invested so much into without understanding or even envisioning kind of what it's going to cost over time. And now they're running into the exact problem they should have foreseen, which is, yeah, you're not going to have that much activity on in transportation. So I mean, what does the alternative look like if they don't bail it out? Is it just shut down and no longer used? Or
I mean, I guess, but I would find it hard pressed that any sort of public transit in California is just gonna go belly up. I would imagine they're probably gonna make a plea to the federal government to bail them out through some sort of legislation, or something from the Department of Transportation will come in and bail them out and give them some sort of low interest loan. But this is another issue where, again, in terms of if we're really going to get into the philosophy of it, free market capitalism wins again. It's basically undefeated. If people are not using the service anymore, yes, the service is going to suffer. Yes, there's not going to be as much money. Either you figure out how to make the service better, or you're going to have to cut costs so that you can keep the service alive. And I guess that's the difference between people like you and I, who believe, hey, the free market says people aren't going into the city as much anymore. Combined with the fact that people don't like using BART anymore. You hear the stories of BART is disgusting. There's feces and urine all over the place. There's crime. It's not safe. People don't feel safe riding BART. Combine that all together, people don't want to ride it. It's not a good service anymore like it used to be. You would think free markets say, okay, it's got to fail. We got to move on from BART. But you have people like Scott Wiener, who are not free market capitalists, who believe more in a state takeover of everything, believe that it is a human right that there should be public transit. Now, is it a right to have public transit? I don't know. I certainly don't think it's a right to have public transit, but maybe that's where they're coming at this, is that it's not free market and it's a service. It's a public right or a human right that they get public transit. So,
I mean, this is the type of stuff I used to run into on the speech and debate team in college, right? They make the argument, so like, this, human rights. You're against this, you're against human rights.
Yeah.
And there's virtually no room for discussion because your stance is anti-human rights.
Yeah.
When you're genuinely looking out for the sustainability of the city, you're looked at as being, you know, oh, why do you hate poor people? It's like, we can't even have a conversation if that's the rhetoric, but that's the rhetoric they, you know, people like Scott Wiener champion. So it's a real, for anybody questioning that system, you're already at a disadvantage because of how they framed the entire argument.
Right. And they do a very good job of kind of framing it as in an emotional stance. That's what the left always does, is they frame things from an emotional stance of, you don't want them to have public, you don't want poor people to have public transit. How dare you? How are they going to get to their jobs? How are they going to feed their family? And you know, you could make the same emotional argument from the right as well and say, if you're taxing them too much and it costs too much money to live in the Bay Area because of the regulations, because of the taxes, because of the housing affordability and because of the zoning and all this stuff, you have already put them in a bad position where they can't afford to have a $300 car payment and be able to drive where they want and have the freedom that they want because of the stuff that you've put in place and you've made it less affordable. But you're right.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, or even being open to new taxes, right? If people were prospering and felt financially well, okay, yeah. I mean, you know, there's many worse things we can invest in. So it's not like it should be gone. But when the population itself is struggling in general, yeah, no one's gonna want to see more taxes to a dying transit system. I mean, that's just the reality of trying to survive under current taxes.
Mm-hmm. So we wanted to touch a little bit upon crime, which is obviously a huge issue in San Francisco. I had sent you this article titled, "Yes, the SFPD has a staffing crisis, but that's just the beginning." And this was interesting. In one of the first paragraphs, it talks about, in recent years, the average amount of time it takes an officer to show up to a critical situation has, on average, grown dramatically worse. From 6 minutes and 25 seconds at the start of 2016 to 8 minutes and 47 seconds by the end of 2022. Second and third tier calls have slowed too, from 17 and 53 minutes respectively. So that's second and third tier, 17 minutes, third tier to show up in an hour in 2016 to 32 minutes for second tier and 73 minutes last year. So obviously there is a staffing shortage. One proffered excuse why these response times have slowed could be because the police department is rapidly losing officers. By SFPD's own reckoning, its tally of full duty officers dropped from 1,872 in 2017 to 1,514 at present. Make no mistake, staffing is a serious problem, but the department's own data reveals it's not only a problem. There's a quantity issue, but there's a quality issue too, and that's much harder to fix. So.
Yeah, that was a very interesting article. I think it stated something like the San Francisco Police Department is fielding around 40% less calls. They simply can't reach 40% less.
Wow.
So they can't even address the incoming calls to begin with and have to cut down on the overall number. That's horrifying. When you look at these number differences, like every second, every minute matters. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're calling the emergency line, like when you see, oh, it's just a couple more minutes late, that's a big deal. When they're measured on their response times in minutes, that's a big increase in waiting when you're looking for emergency help. So,
yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like much, but 6 minutes to almost 9 minutes, those 3 minutes could be life saving.
Absolutely.
You know, if someone's breaking into your home, that 3 minutes could be the difference between life and death. I mean, I don't advocate that you wait for the police to be your personal security when it comes to your own home, but for some people in San Francisco, yeah, they do wait for the police to be their personal security. 3 minutes is a big deal, you know? If there's someone in your house and you're trying to hide from them and you're trying to get away from them, three minutes is a long time. Or any other issues.
Yeah. Time slows down when you're in that kind of scenario. And so like every second is it could be life or death. Like that's no joke at all.
Yeah.
And I think the article also stated that San Francisco arrest rates are the lowest in California.
Yeah. I was just looking at that. San Francisco arrest rates are low, the lowest in California by a long shot. And over the past couple of years, as the pandemic hit, the arrest rate dropped at the number of available officers decreased. So let's see. Yeah, you can see the arrest rate went all the way down to like 40%.
Staggering drops. Not just like, oh, it's like, it's all the stats are tanking.
If you look at it, it's like 2021 and it just goes bonk. Like as soon as it hits 2020 and the pandemic and riots, it just goes right down the tubes. I'm trying to find. The rate at which violent crimes are solved has dropped along with the staffing since 2019. So that has also gone down. Property crime. It goes on and on and on for so many different stats, and we'll post it in the show notes so you can kind of look at it yourself. But I do want to take a quick watch of London Breed. If you don't know who London Breed is, she is the mayor of San Francisco, and she's been kind of under the gun a little bit because of how bad San Francisco has gotten. She's tried to moderate her position. We're going to watch this quick little video. This is from ABC7, which is the local news channel up there. So let's pull that up.
With San Francisco Mayor London Breed.
Jumping to conclusions, speculating, and painting San Francisco in a very negative light. And what I saw in San Francisco this past weekend was something completely different.
A city that has run into repeated problems with its reputation since the start of the pandemic, from crime to the economy to bringing tourists back.
Tonight, we get to the bottom of the issues plaguing the city by the bay and the solutions it needs to find its way forward. Good evening. I'm Amma Dates.
And I'm Dan Ashley. Thank you for joining us. ABC 7 News reporter Tim Johns wanted to get those critical answers from the city's top official.
Yeah, Tim joins us live now in the newsroom with more from his talk with the mayor. Tim.
Yeah, Dan, Mayor Breed and I talked about a variety of topics, including crime and public safety, the city's reputation around the country, and her plans to revitalize our local economy and get downtown moving once again.
For me, San Francisco represents hope. It represents opportunity.
A one-on-one sit-down with San Francisco Mayor.
I'm just going to make this comment. It has really nothing to do about politics. I don't know who did the lighting on this interview, but it's got to be some of the worst lighting.
Yeah, they're in the dark.
Yeah, they're sitting in the dark. If you're listening on audio, you can't really see it. They're in this old dark room. It looks like you could be in a creepy old library. And the lighting on London Breed does not look good either. It gives her a lot of bags under her eyes. So definitely not a flattering start to the interview.
Mayor London Breed, the city making headlines recently for all the wrong reasons. From the murder of tech executive Bob Lee to the closing of a Whole Foods and an ongoing drug crisis. I asked the mayor what she's doing to keep the city safe.
Our overall crime rates are down. Our clearance rate in San Francisco for homicides is at 85%. The rest of the country's average is at 60%.
Mayor Breed points to the extra funding she helped push through for the San Francisco Police Department and says public safety is one of her top concerns.
What now all of a sudden? It's one of her top concerns. But in 2020, London Breed was singing a different tune. She was singing all about defund the police. She got swept up in the whole BLM riots and protests, which we saw in San Francisco. And I think she had to eat crow a little bit. I think she had to kind of come back and say, maybe we shouldn't defund the police after all this. Right?
Yeah, that's...
According to the latest FBI data, San Francisco's property crime rates are among the highest nationwide. However, for homicides per capita, it ranks close to the bottom among major cities.
Oftentimes, the PR matters more than the reality, whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. Are you worried about the reputation that our city is getting both domestically and even abroad?
That answer was yes. And Breed says the city is taking steps to confront this perception head on by spreading more positive information nationwide about San Francisco.
Spreading more positive propaganda nationwide.
What? Fix the issue. What do you mean spread? Let's just tell everybody we're doing great when we're not.
It's like those commercials you see advertising, people come to California, the tourism for California. Yeah. And it's they show everyone on the beach and having a good time, and they're at Disneyland, or everyone's oh, dreams come true in California. And then it's don't show downtown LA or San Francisco or San Diego. Just don't show those areas. Show the beach.
We are looking at launching a campaign to get people to San Francisco. We're hoping to be able to launch it in May or June.
We also discussed her plans to revitalize the city's crucial downtown core. Office vacancies are currently sitting at an all-time high of around 30%, and tech layoffs have hit the local economy hard. Reed says with hybrid work not likely to go away, the city needs to reinvent its central business district. She wants to attract new industries like AI and biotech into the city and convert unused office space into housing and cultural venues.
What we are doing is we're trying to make it easy.
It's really hard to change office space into housing. Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And it's really expensive to do so. It's not as easy as just slapping some walls on offices and be like, okay, there's your apartment. I mean, you got to talk about the different needs of an apartment. You got to talk about heating, independent cooling systems, showers, toilets. I mean, it's just, you got to gut a whole building and start all over again. And that's on top of whether the regulations in San Francisco and with the state allow you to even do so such a thing efficiently.
Yeah, zoning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, zoning issues. I mean, they're probably tripping over their own feet based on their own zoning laws. So it's like, there's a lot to be done before you just slap home on office. Like it's not as easy
It's not as easy as they're making it sound. So
to convert office space for uses that people want, that people need other than office space and make our policies different than what they are now.
No easy task in a city that's often criticized for getting in its own way.
Do you think we have the political willpower in the city to do that? I know you and your office have been fierce advocates of the thing you mentioned there, but you do have your critics, board of supervisors.
I hope so, because the money that is generated by mostly downtown in San Francisco is the same money that many of those critics want to use for many of our social service programs. And right now, our city is facing a $780 million budget deficit.
Breed says there's no doubt that San Francisco is currently in a transition period, but she rejects the notion of the city entering a permanent downward spiral, especially given the concentration of wealth and talent in our region. For her, the city by the bay will always have its magic.
People have constantly written the obituary of San Francisco, and I say to them, you better write in pencil, because you're going to have to rewrite what happens as a result of what we're going to see change in our city. But more importantly, you're going to eat your words.
Now, another important thing.
Okay. So that was London Breed painting quite the rosy picture about. And she's got to. I mean, she's the mayor. She's got to paint a rosy picture. She's got a tough uphill battle. I don't think she expected that she would be the mayor of San Francisco in the middle of all this crime, homelessness. Oh, and on top of a pandemic that completely spiraled out of control. I don't think she was ready for that. Although she did say some stats about crime. And I found this site, Neighborhood Scout. It's the only one that I could find like up to date kind of data about it. Did you know that out of total crime index, San Francisco is a 2, with 100 being the safest. So it's safer than only 2% of U.S. neighborhoods.
Wow.
So already off the bat, not incredibly safe place to be. It does put it into perspective. Crime rate per 1,000 residents, 5.39. That's about violent crimes, 4,391. Property, 39,000. Let's see. Crime rate comparison. Violent crime comparison per 1,000 residents. California is at 4.4. And San Francisco's at 5.39. The national median is 4. So it's already worse than the national median. Chances of becoming a victim of violent crime, 1 in 86 in San Francisco, 1 in 227 in California. So pretty close there. Let's see. I'm trying to see what else we have here. Oh, this is a good one. Property crime compared to per 1,000 residents. California is 23.47 with the national median 19. Are you ready for the San Francisco number?
Oh my God.
48.94. That is, it's really bad. Chances of becoming a victim of property crime in San Francisco, 1 in 20.
1 in 20?
Yeah. 1 in 20 is your chance of being a victim of property crime in California.
You could literally grab, just right in the like piazza, you know, right down the street, grab a group of people, and chances are a couple of them have had their freaking, that's crazy. Yeah.
1 in 20. California is 1 in 43. So,
what 1 in 20 is San Francisco?
Yes, 1 in 20 is San Francisco. Okay, San Francisco crimes per square mile.
Oh my God.
The national median is 26.8. California sits at 83. Are you ready for the San Francisco number? I don't think you're ready.
There is no way.
Why don't you guess what the San Francisco number is?
Oh, God.
If California is 83.
What, 93?
No.
90?
Nope.
97?
Nope. You're still way off. You want to know the number?
Yeah.
It is 938.
Wait, 938.
So crimes per square mile in San Francisco.
Dude, that's a significant number.
That's a huge number from 83, and the national median is 26.8. That's how bad it is in San Francisco. So, just some fun.
That's like staggering. That's like, yeah, that puts it in perspective.
Yeah. There's another, speaking of crime, there is another video I do want to show. This is Michael Schellenberger on with Chris Cuomo, of all people. Chris Cuomo found a landing spot on a different station called News Nation. Michael Schellenberger, who's been, I think, one of the better vocal critics of California, and he wrote the great book San Francisco. Great book if you want to read it. He was my personal choice for governor at the last race, but, you know, for whatever that amounts for. Let's hear him talk to Chris Cuomo about San Francisco.
They need to do this. I think they are embarrassed. As you may know, Governor Newsom has been in Florida, a video of him at a elementary or a preschool singing songs. I don't think that's a good look when what's going on in San Francisco is what we've been documenting. Open air drug use. We discovered a young woman having a psychotic breakdown, screaming. We thought she was being raped. We called 911. They said they were going to send somebody. They never did. This is a typical experience we have. We discover people. I discovered a naked young woman, the 9/11, they never came. The situation's out of control. They don't have enough police. They don't have enough doctors. They don't have enough nurses. And it's nobody's home at top, from the governor to the mayor on down.
They're not a poor city. Why are they down so many cops and first responders?
It's politics. I mean, in 2020, Mayor London Breed said that she was going to defund the police, divert police funding to the African-American community. She had to reverse that as soon as crime started spiking. But the police in San Francisco are tired of being blamed for things that they didn't do. They didn't cause George Floyd's death. In fact, the San Francisco Police Department had been making strong gains in terms of its own performance, in terms of reducing incidents of violence. And they just didn't want to be respected. They didn't want to be yelled at or spit on or have feces and urine thrown at them as they did in 2020 during Black Lives Matter protests. So the police are demoralized. We lack 540 police officers. Only 10 came out of the police academy. Things are only getting worse, unfortunately.
I just want to emphasize that.
Crazy.
Only 10 came out of the San Francisco Police Department Academy.
San Francisco.
Of all of San Francisco, they could only get 10 people to graduate from the academy. Which means I would assume most of the people who go into the police academy, the majority probably graduate and become police officers. So that means the number that they probably even started with was still small, less than 20. That's unbelievable that it's 10.
The morale is shot. It is. I mean, why would you be a police officer in San Francisco?
Oh yeah. When you've been for a year and a half, when the sentiment in the city has been defund the police and you're all murderers and you're racist and you're horrible people, why would you want to be a police officer in San Francisco? It's probably the worst job in the world. So, that stat is astonishing when you're already at a 500 officer deficit from 1800. So.
Certainly we keep waiting for San Francisco to hit bottom and it just never does. The drugs become contaminated. The drug dealers get more violent. A baby overdosed on fentanyl. A stillborn baby was found in a porta potty. Homicide, a woman had her legs rotted and amputated. I mean, it's just the list of horrors goes on and on, but I think you're right to hold responsibility where it needs to be held, which is with the governor, with the mayor. The president needs to be involved if necessary, but we need to get people on the street to shut down the violence, the assaults, and the open air drug dealing.
Hey, thank you for
watching. You're welcome, Chris Cuomo. You're very welcome for watching. That video, if you're listening on audio, if you can't see the video is, it looks like a war zone. It looks like Iraq. There's fires, everything is destroyed, graffiti everywhere. I mean, that does not look like an American first world city. It's unbelievable when you watch that video. And that's what Michael Schellenberger took himself. And you just look at that and go, how is this happening in America? How is this happening in what Gavin Newsom likes to brag about, the fifth largest economy in the world, and how great and how fantastic California is, when his home city is literally in decay and in just absolute a state of chaos.
You know what scared me about what you said? You said, you know, in the beginning, it's like, do we let San Francisco kind of run its natural course and just kind of crash on its own? But when you hear Michael say, you know, we just keep thinking it's at its bottom and it just keeps getting worse. Like, that's actually a very scary thing to hear, because if there's no rock bottom in sight, that means it's going to become more violent, more dangerous. Like, you haven't plateaued. Like, it can and is going to get worse. And that I just, at what point is it too far gone? I mean, it's just crazy to talk about such a large city in this way because of how many things are going bad in such a wealthy city.
Well, are we witnessing the modern day Detroit? Is this century's Detroit, where a huge sector of the American economy resided in San Francisco? They were the golden city on the hill that had more money than it knew what it could do with. And something happened and they all moved out and all the business moved out and the social services dried up, crime increased. And this is what you're left with, is you have sort of a hollowed out city. So I think if you're thinking about that scary rock bottom, San Francisco could become this century's Detroit if you don't do anything and just let it completely bottom out, where people go back to San Francisco and go, oh, it used to be beautiful. Remember years ago when there was tech business and then all the tech left. And now we're stuck with this, and it's just hollowed out buildings and no one wants to go there and the crime is so bad. It may be that, you know, San Francisco may be this century's Detroit.
Did you catch how she said she wants to bring in technology companies and AI companies? You would think Silicon Valley being right there would be an easy connection between Silicon and San Francisco. But as of today, these companies are trying to get out. They're trying to leave California. They're not trying to do business in San Francisco anymore. So like you said, like, there is capital flight in many ways with this golden industry realizing, all right, we've kind of run our course. Everything's going to shit. Let's move our headquarters. And that's happening more than you would think. So yeah, that's a great analogy. Detroit, this generation's Detroit, because that's exactly what's happening. And industry is just moving on.
So what, in terms of what Michael Schellenberger was saying, who has to step in? Well, we got that news just yesterday, actually. Governor Newsom directed CHP, National Guard, to assist San Francisco with handling a fentanyl crisis. With many bills that would increase punishments for those selling fentanyl currently up air in Sacramento. One that was actually, I just posted on my stories, did not make it out of committee, which would have, if they, it's escaping me right now, but it's about if you knowingly get caught selling fentanyl and you know it's fentanyl and you do it again, you can be charged with homicide. So, and it was a bipartisan bill. Our mayor, Todd Gloria, actually went up to Sacramento to advocate for that bill to be passed, and it got shot down in committee. So our own politicians in Sacramento did not back this bill to make it harsher on fentanyl dealers.
When Gloria is on the side,
it's crazy. When Todd Gloria is on the side of common sense and actual solutions, you go, what world are we living in, when he's actually the sane person? So they're going to be break. They haven't really said how much they're going to do. Even I believe it was the sheriff of that area said, we're not really sure what National Guard is going to do. They're just going to be in a supportive role. It's going to be weird seeing National Guard walking around San Francisco or bussing around San Francisco.
See, to me, this is one of these strategies when all is lost that you just, you grasp at, hoping relief will come. Like San Diego's doing it with, you know, trying to do it with the cameras, trying to get cameras everywhere, because our own city here has failed addressing crime and has its own shortages and deficiencies. So National Guard and CHP stepping in is kind of like this last ditched effort. I mean, I don't really know what they're gonna do. I mean,
it's gonna look weird.
Yeah, it's I'm like uneasy about him sending in really a branch of the military into the city, into the streets. Like, I mean, I know there's a crisis, but
the optics are not gonna look good for London Breed's propaganda mission of come to San Francisco, where you may get to meet our National Guard.
Yeah,
while they patrol the streets for fentanyl and drug dealers. To answer the question we were talking about before, this is from another article I'll post in the show notes. Converting offices to residential housing. It says that it can take up to 87 permits, 1,000 days of meetings, and $500,000 in fines to build residential housing projects. So,
all right.
It costs an estimated $100,000 to build one tiny home for the homeless, up to 10 times more than AR Bay Area, and almost $1.2 million to build a single unit of affordable housing. So $1.2 just to build a single unit of affordable housing. So how much do you have to sell it for before you can make a profit?
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's happening across the entire state. You got BlackRock, you got these big hedge funds coming in and swooping up all this affordable housing, and it never was affordable to begin with. I mean, anything built today is not going to be, under the current climate, it's not going to be affordable, whatever that threshold even is, which it seems like changes all the time.
Yeah.
So.
So this is a different San Francisco Chronicle article, and it asks, but if you were the state of California and you were staring down a projected $22 billion budget deficit, would you invest your scarce resources in San Francisco, which has repeatedly proven itself unfit for such investments by building a vast, inefficient bureaucracy at the expense of taxpayers and vulnerable residents? The article goes on to answer, no. So even San Francisco Chronicle is being really harsh on San Francisco. This is another good article for anybody who wants to kind of read it. Like we were talking about, you put in San Francisco deficit, San Francisco crime problem, you're going to find article after article of and recent too, that 2 days ago, a week ago, it's very recent.
Yeah, last night,
Yeah,
I was going to say, last night, five shot, one killed outside San Francisco nightclub. Last night.
Yeah, so it's just ongoing. We got a couple minutes left before the hour. So I guess the final question is, the title of this episode, should we let San Francisco fail? Tough question.
It's a very tough question because there's people we're talking about, right? There's people's lives and their livelihood. They call San Francisco home. You know, we look at it as a destructive machine up north, but, you know, people call that place their home. And so, you know, no, I don't want to see it fail. But when it comes to the industries and the really piss poor governance and investment, like, yeah, that stuff should fail because it will send hopefully a wake up call to what the priorities of their electeds are. You know, oh, do we want to pass a resolution telling the police that they're all racist, or do we want to address concrete plans that can provide, you know, some type of addressing the issue? But yeah, I think, you know, I don't think technology is dependent on Silicon or San Francisco anymore. So it's like, what are we in? What would the state or the federal government be investing in other than their friends?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think natural course is going to straighten things out. And it's bad now. It's not like getting things in order isn't going to make it that, you know, I don't know. It's a tough situation. It's a scary one because I worry the model of San Francisco is what's being championed here. And ironically, our mayor being on the opposite side of San Francisco comes back to San Diego, advocates for San Francisco policies, and then goes back to San Francisco. You know, it's like, it's a cluster.
So my take on it is, I think, and you're correct, it is nuanced. It's not easy to just go, let it fail, let it go completely into Mad Max territory and just turn into lawlessness. This doesn't need to be escape from San Francisco where it's just complete war zone and all that. I think there should be an effort to ensure the safety of the citizens. I think that should be the bare minimum. And I think if it does require calling in the National Guard, CHP, and cracking down on drug dealers and fentanyl and getting homeless off the street, that's what it should do. That's the bare minimum of what government should do anyway, is public safety. But outside of that, I worry that stuff like BART, programs, social services, my concern is that if you get bailed out, you'll never learn your lesson. And San Francisco, my fear is that if the federal government comes in or somehow California comes in and goes, oh, we're going to give you this money, bail you out, you can keep all your social services, you don't have to do any cuts or anything like that, then what lesson have they learned? They haven't learned that they ran the city into the ground, or that they've mismanaged it and that the finances have been completely mismanaged. It needs to go through a portion of time where it hurts. They have to go through a little bit of a painful transition. And they have to figure, it's kind of like what happened with New York from the 70s to the 80s. In the 70s, New York City was awful. Nobody really wanted to come help. The first time the mayor of New York went to the president and said, hey, we need money, we're bankrupt, president shot him down, said, no, we're not giving you any money. He eventually relented, gave him some money, but it had to go through this period of transition where things got really bad until you had developers and people come in and start to fix the city and see opportunity there and turn it into what it was, I would say, for a stretch from like the 90s through early 2000s, where it was safe. People wanted to come, people wanted to live there. People took their kids to go in and see a show. There was tourism. You know, New York was the safest big city in the world. Maybe San Francisco needs to go through that right now. They need to go through this really hard transition and sit back and go, things are going to be bad. We have to make cuts. We have to figure out what's working and what's not working. and we have to reinvent ourselves for the next step. But I don't think a flat bailout of San Francisco is the way to go. So I guess it's a nuanced answer. Should it fail? To a certain extent, I believe San Francisco should fail on the merits of that it got overbloated and overextended. It should make sure it protects its citizens, keeps it safe. Maybe that's the bare minimum, but other than that, let it fail and learn its lesson. So any thoughts on that?
No, you said that really well. I definitely agree with that. I mean, like you said, or like we were saying, very nuanced, protect the people, but do not try and sacrifice the future of the people on broken processes today. Like, let those die out. Let the self-correcting happen by letting some certain things go. And I mean, yeah, let it run its natural course, which may get worse before it gets better, but everything ebbs and flows.
Yeah. And I think it needs to figure it out. And maybe those days of Full House and the shiny city by the bay is gone and it's in the past, and we'll look back on it and be like, I remember when San Francisco was so nice. And we'll look at it and be like, it's not so nice anymore. If we have like 30 seconds that we can try and banter and kill, I want to throw this out to the chat to see what their just quick up or down vote, whether they would you let San Francisco fail? Yes or no. You can just say yes or no in the chat. Camille already says, isn't it already a failure? Camille's watching you, Zach, to make sure you're not stealing her job. She's very worried about you stealing her job. Somebody said, Camille says yes. Jennifer says it's already failed. I think it's got a long way to go. Like Michael Schoenberger said, I think it can get a lot worse. So somebody says, yes, it's a failure. Camille, you're not getting fired tonight. Don't worry about that. I don't think Zach has any interest in taking your job. He enjoys being a guest. So
yeah, it's fun being a guest.
It's fun being a guest. All right. With that said, that's a wrap on this episode. Thanks everyone for tuning in. This was a fun episode. I've been wanting to do this for a couple of weeks, and yeah, there's just a lot of stuff out there. So if you were interested in any of the stuff that we talked about tonight, I'll put all the articles and the videos in the show notes so you can go ahead and look it up for yourself and read the articles. I suggest you do, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. And you know it's not biased. If it's coming from the San Francisco Chronicle, you know it's not Fox News or OAN or Newsmax writing an article on it. It's like San Francisco Chronicle is calling out San Francisco, so you know it's pretty bad. One thing before I like to end the show is, if you like to support the show, best thing you can do that is free to do, share the show with a friend. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, all that stuff. And we'll see you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody. Later.